Welcome once again to our series on the universal call to holiness or wholeness, or the call of all persons to follow faithfully in the footsteps of Jesus, who is the best example we have, the best model we have, what it means to be truly whole, holy, and happy. You know, there's a saying in the wonderful classic Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis that Jesus, he quotes about Jesus is the way and the truth and the life. And Thomas goes on to say that without the way, there is no going, and without the truth, there is no knowing, and without the life, there is no growing. So that's why we're talking about how can we respond to this, a wonderful call from Vatican Council II and Pope John Paul II in his pilgrimage around the world to alert us all to our wonderful call to be holy like Jesus. My guest again is Ron Eldred, who is Professor of World History and Religion at John Paul II Catholic High, and I, your host, am Monsignor Moran, Pastor Emeritus at St. Patrick's. Ron, welcome once again. We've been talking about the means to holiness, prayer, meditation, particularly the seven sacraments that Jesus gave us. And then we came to the virtues of faith and hope and love, the theological virtues that focus on God himself. And then the moral or the cardinal virtues, or the main moral virtues, prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude. So since we've been talking about these good habits, now we're logically going into deal with the bad habits or the vices that tempt us and pull us down and put us in the quicksand of self-indulgence and self-prison. So what do we got to say about the bad habits are the vices?
Well, when we fail to practice the virtues, that is the good habits, whether they be infused or whether they be the result of repetition, that is, when we talk about virtues, we call these good moral habits, we are in danger of replacing them with the opposite bad habits. And if you, and we call those vices, bad habits or vices. One or a few bad acts of a particular kind do not make a vice or a bad habit, but a continual practice of particular bad acts becomes habitual, therefore it becomes a vice.
Okay, so a bad habit, something we consistently do, as well as a good habit, is something we consistently do.
Yes.
Virtue and a vice. Okay.
Well, there exists what we call the capital sins. And if these were practiced on a regular basis, any one of them, then they would become, of course, I guess we could just call them capital vices. I haven't necessarily heard them call that, but essentially they become habits.
Okay.
They become ingrained into our personalities.
We there are, as I believe, seven capital sins. I'm surprised at the number of how seven keeps coming up in the Bible. The seven gifts of the Holy Spirit and the seven bodily works of mercy and the seven spiritual works of mercy, the seven capital sins and so forth. So seven seems to be kind of a mystical number for good or for evil. Well, could you give us an idea of what traditionally the church and the saints, and of course the catechism now, has culled out of the scriptures to remind us that these are the roots, are the capital sources from which other sins flow?
The capital vices are pride, avarice, or another word for that's greed, lust, anger, gluttony, envy, and sloth. Now, we have we'll discuss those, the meaning, in just a little bit, but we have what we call the opposing virtues,
okay.
The very opposite. And the very opposite of pride, of course, would be humility. Pride is considered to be the worst sin of all because it was the sin of Lucifer, of Satan, when he rebelled against God. He wanted to be God, not just like God. He wanted to be God. He wanted to make up his own rules.
And in a sense, Adam and Eve wanted to make up their own rules.
They did the same, and that's how he tempted them. You know, if you eat of this tree of knowledge of good and evil, you will be God. You'll know good and evil. And in other words, that was the lack of humility. And so humility is probably, that's why it's considered to be the greatest of virtues, because it's the very opposite of the worst of all of the capital sins, which is pride. Avarice or greed, the opposite of that, it's contrasted to generosity. Lust is contrasted to chastity. Anger is contrasted to meekness. Gluttony is contrasted to temperance, that is, you know, controlling the appetites with right reason. Mm-hmm. Envy, the opposite of that is brotherly love. And then finally, sloth. You know, you've seen the sloth where they get that term, the animal that, South American animal that it's almost painful to watch them move because they move so slow.
What is it? I forgot what that animal
it's
is.
It's called a sloth.
Oh, is it called a sloth?
That's the name of the animal.
Oh, I didn't know
it's
that.
It's a sloth, yes.
Okay.
So I don't know whether the word sloth already existed and they named this animal. I suspect that's how the animal got the name, but that's actually the name of the animal. But actually, the opposite of sloth, which is basically, as we'll see later on, spiritual laziness, diligence is the opposite of sloth.
Okay, so they one leads the lack of one leads to the other. If I lack humility, I'm going to end up in pride, or if I have chastity, I'm going to keep away from lust, and so they feed back and forth.
We could give some examples of those. I have some here. Maybe I can pick out a few here that. For example, one who entertains too great of an opinion of himself or herself, or in valuing ourselves above our what we deserve, you know, that would be an example of a lack of humility.
Okay, now let's talk about that just a moment, because we have such an emphasis today in psychology about having good and a proper self-esteem, that perhaps humility would seem to militate against that when it really doesn't. Isn't humility just, as Teresa Lisieux described it, truth? That I am wonderful,
yes,
because I'm a child of God. I've been given many gifts, outstanding talents, every person. But on the other hand, I'm a creature. I was created.
I think by truth, if we apply that to this situation, it would be simply recognizing one's limitations.
Okay.
Reality.
All right.
A lot of times people have who are prideful have a exalted notion of their abilities and their importance and this and that and the other. A lot of times people think of their importance, unfortunately, as relative to other people. Being more important, supposedly, than other people, or that is better than other people, or with more power, or more property, or more prestige, or more privilege, or whatever. Somehow that makes them think that, that they're better.
And, of course, as much as Americans, we stress that we are equal before the law, but we're not equal in talents, abilities, background, education. but those are certainly gifts. One child is born with a crippled foot and another child is born just to be a great football star. But that was a given at birth. Rather, it wasn't something they made for themselves. So I think that's why that humility, being truth, keeps us always honest. What's another sin of pride that we come up against?
Well, contempt for others. On account of the good opinions we have of ourselves, and when this contempt is manifested by words or actions or by other such things, I think failure to render, to being some to submit to one's superiors, one's boss, or one's
lawful authority,
or authority,
could
yes,
be civil or church.
Yes, by disobeying them, by blaming them, or murmuring behind their backs, or things of that sort.
Children against their parents.
Showing contempt to someone if you've been corrected. Maybe not to their face if you're afraid of them, but behind their back or whatever. These would all be examples. Curiosity, excessive curiosity. You know, it's good to be curious, but, you know, we have an old saying, curiosity killed the cat. And a lot of times people in science sometimes can be overly curious. People in, particularly in religious matters, we got to be very careful that we're not overly curious in some matters. I recall right, St. Thomas Aquinas warned us against, and Pope Pius X very much comes to mind now, and his famous encyclical Pascendi, I believe was the Latin for that, where he condemns a lot of the excesses of modernism back in the, toward the turn of the 19th century into going into the
So would you say
century.
It's pride if I say I don't accept anything I cannot fully understand?
Yes, I think that's...
That'd be a false sense of pride.
Yes, and I think that's what Pius was referring to, that kind of curiosity.
When we're in the Catholic faith, we're up against mystery. And I think the church has always believed that mystery of God, as compared to the smallness of our creatureliness, we can't pour the ocean into a thimble. And Augustine was trying to do that, I think, with the Trinity.
I think that a lot of times that kind of curiosity has a tendency to try to strip the mystery out of religion. And I think that's why probably you would have to consider that kind of thing sinful.
Okay, so we do need to distinguish between false pride and good pride. There's a good pride that I'm
yes.
a child of God. I'm an inheritor of the kingdom of heaven. I was so good, Jesus died for me. So,
and there's nothing wrong with feeling a sense of accomplishment and
having done a hard work,
having done a good job, and within perspective,
sure,
and no better than what the job was, but still, nonetheless, it was a job well done and for the right purpose. And there's nothing wrong with being proud of your children or your grandchildren. So when we're talking about the sin of pride, we're not talking about those kinds of
good pride.
Good pride.
There's a good human pride,
yes.
And there's a counterfeit
yes.
human pride.
But it all goes back to the fact that we have a lot to be proud for because we are created in God's image and likeness.
If I'm ungrateful, that's probably one of the signs I'm not recognizing the source of all my gifts,
yes.
God and my parents and my teachers and those who helped me become what I was able to become. Well, what's an example of gluttony?
Gluttony, it would be an excess of eating, drinking, to the point where it would be detrimental to our health, or it might deprive other people of sufficient, food and drink and what have you. Or perhaps to the point where it might be scandalous to set a bad example for other people. In other words, it can have the detrimental effect on our own health, yet at the same time it can also be detrimental to others because we're setting a bad example.
Well, the key example in the gospel would be Dives, and Lazarus is dying at his door for crumbs from the rich man's table. And he's not even cognizant or aware that's going on. So I suppose some modern examples of that would be bulimia. A person can, these are quicksands that a person can get in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so concerned about keeping my weight down or my waist trim that I vomit back up what I'm eating. And of course, there's an addiction. Then, of course, getting addicted to alcohol or drugs, of course. So when our appetites for food or drink I read somebody, a little story, somebody recently who said, I was getting so tired in my work, I thought I would take meth in order to pep me up. And she was testifying from the Rockville prison about how she got put into prison, how she got deeper and deeper into meth, just because it started as a means of, well, I want to get a little more energy. So these things can easily draw us and then imprison us in the quicksand or in the handcuffs. What about envy? What's some examples of envy?
Well, it would be, one case would be if one were troubled over the success of your one's neighbor. If they had something that you didn't have, whether it be property or it could be the possession of some ability, some accomplishment or something of that sort, to begrudge them that, to feel resentful because of that, spiteful because of it or whatever.
It's probably one of the more subtle of the quicksands we can fall into. I think it was Saint Cyprian who wrote a treatise, and going through the scriptures, and I can't remember it all right offhand, but basically he said, for instance, Cain killed Abel out of envy, because his sacrifice was accepted and Cain's wasn't. Saul tried to kill David out of envy because he was getting more praise and recognition as a commander in the army. He gave a few more, but of course the worst one, or the most startling one he gave, that Jesus was, and it's, I noticed that in the Passion this week, Pontius Pilate knew that the chief priests had delivered Jesus up out of envy. So it's a thing that can lead, as we say, the capital sins lead to all other kinds of sin, murder and plotting and destruction of a person's character and the like. So
the example most people think of when they think of envy is when we desire something that belongs to another, whether it be authority that they have, or prestige that they have, or privilege they have, or property they have, things of that sort.
I heard a good way to test myself. if I'm willing to let somebody else get the credit for something I did, that would be then I'm not locked into envy. But it's so easy. I don't want something good to happen if somebody else is going to get credit for it. So we're struggling with inner demons that kind of like bats cling to the wall of our mind and our psyche. What about anger? Most of us are pretty acquainted with anger. Why is that considered a capital or a root sin?
Well, if a person gets overly upset about something, at someone particularly, it could very easily lead to something worse. That's one of the reasons given. You know, I think Christ himself said at one time, in fact it was during the Sermon on the Mount, you know, you are told not to kill, but I tell you not to be angry. And the reason, of course, is that anger can lead to someone harming someone, even to the point of killing them.
Sure. So it's another good explanation of why these seven capital are root sins. Anger may not be as bad as murder, but they're the roots out of which much more evil actions can actually come.
There would be a lot of examples there. For example, quarreling could lead to anger, or you know, using bad language, oaths, curses, threats, anything of that sort, taking revenge or desire to take revenge, refusing to pardon injuries, or to be reconciled with our enemies or
holding on to my anger, resentments. That's such a great temptation for us all. I heard a little saying, anger blows out the light of the mind. And that's why we can do terrible things. If anger really does blow out the light of my mind, which it can easily do. Well, how about greed or avarice?
Well, greed is the desire to amass earthly goods without any limit or without regard to other people. At least that's one aspect of it. It would be a desire to commit some kind of injustice by harming our neighbor and his temporal goods.
I can steal.
Yes.
I want other things, and I don't care how I have to hurt other people to get them.
Well, that's one of the reasons it's forbidden, because it could lead to stealing. Mm-hmm. If you want something that someone has, at least inordinately, then excessively, the next step could be stealing it, actually trying to take it from them, either in a hidden way or even by violence.
I notice they always talk about when I say I need something, is it greed or need? And it can easily be greed that, I just have a desire, you know, to go out and shop till I drop, even though I don't need the stuff. I mean, it gives me some kind of fulfillment or dissipation. I get my mind off my troubles. And then, of course, I'm in deep credit card problems. But greed and need easily slips into greed for all of us. Okay, how about covetousness?
Covetousness would be wanting something that belonged to another person. It's closely related to envy. Sometimes the terms are used interchangeably. It would be an unreasonable love of temporal goods, of material goods, things of this life. It would be an excessive desire for wealth for its own sake, and not for the love of God or the benefit of mankind in some way or another.
Of course, we have the commandments, do not covet your neighbor's wife, do not covet your neighbor's goods. And of course, covet means to desire in an unjust way.
Yes.
We can covet something we see in an advertisement if I'm willing to buy it, pay for it. So the word, I think, has lost some of its sinfulness in our culture, that this is a coveted award for the NBA or something like that. Doesn't mean a sinful award, but the word is sort of mutated in our culture, I think. But in its original biblical meaning, it means to desire in some wrong, unjust way. Okay, we've got sloth or sloth. What is the animal? I don't know what the animal is in Latin America.
Well, yes, there's this...
like an armadillo or something?
No, it's a hairy animal. And because it's so very slow, almost agonizingly slow to watch a sloth move, it just... and it lives, you know, in various parts of South America. They live in trees, I think, for the most part.
Okay.
But when we talk about sloth, we generally mean spiritual laziness.
Okay, that's a part we're emphasizing. It's not just laziness, mm-hmm. It's spiritual laziness.
Spiritual.
I may be in good health, good spirit, but I just don't like, and I'm not going to put any time into prayer.
An example of that would be turning away from doing something good that one should because it's too much effort. I don't want to put that much effort into it.
I don't want to go to Mass on Sunday because it's raining out.
Or I don't want to say my daily prayers. I don't want to read the Bible a little bit. Or I don't want to volunteer to do, you know, corporal or works of mercy or whatever because, you know, I'm just basically too lazy.
Okay.
But also this would, in neglecting the things that are grave responsibilities, because of particularly if they deal with religious matters, but also other matters as well, that would be sloth. And not looking after your dependents the way you should and taking care of them would be an example of sloth. There is one other. For some reason, we failed to mention it a while ago, and that was lust.
Oh, okay.
Lust certainly is an inordinate or an excessive or an improper use of the sexual drive that we have, that God gave us to propagate the human race and to share, you know, an intimate, loving relationship, of course, with one's husband or wife.
Certainly, that's one of the capital sins, seven capital sins or vices, that is almost publicly encouraged today by advertising, by pornography on the internet, by magazines, movies. Anger is a difficult power to control, and lust is a difficult power. Sexual drive is a difficult power to control, and I think our hurried society leads us to anger easily, road rage, and that type of thing, and our sexually explicit and society certainly encourages us to let the sexual appetite get beyond reason. So we're talking about the seven capital sins or vices, out of which the other even more gross sins, murder, ruining people's names out of envy,
Well, before we go on to another topic, I'd like to make some concluding remarks here in regard to the capital sins. One becomes what he does. And if one assiduously practices virtues, that is, good habits, over his lifetime, he or she will become a virtuous and holy person, a brother or sister of Jesus, and a child of God the Father, full of God's sanctifying grace and deserving to inherit heaven. On the other hand, if one practices vices, that is, bad habits, over his or her lifetime, he or she will become an evil person, a wicked person, who will deserve disinheritance from God's family and deserving to spend eternity in everlasting hell. And I think one thing I'd like to leave with our listeners before we go on to the next subject, gifts of the Holy Spirit, is, as with the theological virtues, the only thing that I'd like to emphasize is that the gifts, that the moral virtues are infused at baptism. We first get our moral virtues at baptism.
Just poured in by a gift from God.
Yes, just like we got the theological virtues first at baptism, we also get the moral virtues of prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude at baptism. Okay. And we're going to emphasize later, we also get the gifts of the Holy Spirit first at baptism.
Okay, so we're on the road to how do we help ourselves to holiness, wholesomeness, wholeness, and happiness. There wasn't any more a happy or holy person than Jesus, and that's why he is the way and the truth and the life. I think Hebrews says, keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. He certainly had good habits and not bad habits or vices. Wasn't he who said, who will convict me of sin? That'd be wonderful if you and I could say that as we're crossing the bridge from time to eternity.
And ultimately, a goal, of course, our goal is how to get to heaven.
Sure. And that, and being holy or whole is that which gets us to heaven.
Yes.
Well, many thanks for our listeners being with us. May God bless you always and in all ways.